Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett on Crime. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my good friend, Manny Barling. Manny, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Simon. How are you today?
I'm great. You know, I don't watch a great deal of TV, but there is an advert. I don't know if you've seen it. It involves someone with a power washer destroying a patio. The wife looks helplessly on while the man of the house wreaks sheer destruction. Well, it's all true. We had our patio power washed yesterday. It removed paint from the floor and actually removed chunks from the wood chair that I use. It was an impressive show of force.
Yeah, I learned yours got to be careful with power washing.
Okay, this week we want to talk about identity theft. It's gone from being a small cottage industry to big business. And joining us today is one of the leading experts on detecting and preventing ID theft, Robert Siciliano. Robert, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
So I, on the East Coast, I work with big security companies that have a security product offering, like ADT and McAfee. I speak to issues of personal security as they relate to information security and identity theft, violence prevention, both offline, you know, on the ground in the physical world, and online, of course, on the internet. As we know, there are criminal hackers both here domestically and abroad, and then there are bad guys in our backyards and when we travel. And my job, my goal, my everyday focus, as you know, Simon, is to make all those citizens and consumers and others aware of their rights, their responsibilities on how to avoid and remove themselves from a dangerous situation.
I've always been interested in identity theft. I mean, like I said, it started literally as a small cottage industry. And I have always equated ID theft to one of two root causes, the main one of which was losing a wallet or a purse. You'd leave it in a store, you drop it on the ground, but that's no longer the case. What are the most common techniques today?
Well, ultimately, the bad guy wants to use your personal identifying information for a number of reasons. The main goal usually is to get paid. You know, they want to turn your information into money some way, somehow. And there's two fundamental forms of identity theft. I mean, certainly there's a numerous kinds, but there's two fundamental forms, and they are new account fraud. New account fraud, of course, is when somebody opens up a new account under your name. You know, they get your social security number, and they open up a new credit card, a new loan, and so forth. That's new account fraud. And then, or they get a utility or a mobile phone under your name. That's new account fraud. And then there's account takeover. Account takeover is when your existing accounts, your online banking account, your bank account, your credit card accounts, any of your existing accounts are taken over in a way where bad guy might, you know, get that wallet or pocketbook or purse, and you have checks in that bag, and they use those checks, and, you know, that's account takeover. Or they get your credit card or credit card number, and they use that. That's also account takeover. That is usually what people think of when they think of identity theft, is credit card fraud. You know, credit card fraud as it relates to account takeover. But, of course, as you know, identity theft is a lot more than simply credit card fraud. It's, you know, new accounts and so many other different accounts that are either opened or taken over.
Manny, you're the legal eagle in this whole deal. The second version of identity theft that springs to my mind is the good old world of dumpster diving. You know, basically you go fish around in someone's garbage, and you can actually find quite delicious stuff. I was sent a file. No, I won't even go there. But what are the legal implications of dumpster diving? If your dumpster's at your back door on private property, is it still fair game?
It depends on the state you live. Certainly in California, none of this is fair game. There's a story about a long piece of litigation involving the Winnie the Pooh series where the heirs sued Disney, and Disney, of course, was dishonest as usual in discovering, didn't provide the documents. So someone said, let's go look at their trash. So they did a little dumpster diving on the edge of Disney's trash when it was put out, and guess what they found? Documents that proved that Disney was lying. But because they were taken from a dumpster, eventually the court ruled they could not be used. So the value of them, even if you try to use them honestly, is really very, very little. Is that different in your neck of the woods, Robert?
Well, from the standpoint of, from a legal standpoint, how the documentation is obtained in regards to making a legal case, that's beyond my forte. The way I see it, the moment that you put your trash on the curb, essentially it's public domain. And when you do that, and this is just from my standpoint, I may be incorrect, but once you do that, it's pretty much up for grabs. And anybody can come by with a pickup truck and throw your trash in the back of that pickup truck. And if you were to call law enforcement to say, somebody just stole my trash, I think they'd say, well, how does somebody steal trash? I mean, if you threw it away, it's trash, right? But that being said, anything in that bag that was thrown away can be used to either, like we talked about previously in regards to identity theft, open up a new account or take over an existing account. So if anyone ever throws their trash away and they would be unnerved by someone who actually took their trash, then that's because you're throwing away too much stuff. If they were to steal my trash or to take my trash, they're going to get, dirty diapers. That's about it. They're not going to get anything of any value that's going to take over an existing account or open up a new account. So that being said, whether if it's a dumpster on private property, any organization that throws away bank, credit bureau, credit union, any entity whatsoever, utility, throws away any records, identifying records that ultimately could be used to steal somebody's identity, that organization would be liable in the form of a data breach. So they're looking at numerous, federal laws that require them to effectively shred and destroy personal information when it's discarded.
Yes, and that is a major problem. There's no question about it. The to me, one of the issues in all of that is that, although people should not have an expectation of privacy, it still really should be a crime to go through someone's garbage for a variety of reasons. You have seniors, for example, who can't afford to buy a shredder, because I presume you shred everything that you feel that it has any danger or potential to be misused. But so many Americans can't afford them, and so many Americans don't think they have a reason to use them, or just simply not very wise in this particular area. So what do we say to those people, Robert, who don't have the financial ability or the desire to spend that money?
So that's a good point. I'm a take responsibility for your life kind of guy. When I say there's a will, there's a way, right? Law enforcement's really not, their motto is, to serve and protect. And sure, great, but they really can't protect like we would like them to. There isn't a cop in every driveway. So people say, where's a cop when you need one? And There just isn't a cop in every driveway. That being said, you are ultimately responsible for your own personal security, whether it's preventing violence or preventing theft. And you are ultimately responsible for preventing your identity from being stolen at some level. And there are a number of things that you can and should do to prevent that. One thing being, you know, personal identifying information that goes out in the trash. If you can't afford a shredder, that's fine. You could burn it. That's easy enough to do. I don't actually shred anything. I burn everything once a year. I have a, you know, backyard fire, and I burn everything. But beyond that, if I'm on the road, you know, if I am in a hotel and I don't want to take back all kinds of paperwork with me, I make a pretty good effort to tear everything up into pretty much small pieces. You know, sitting in front of the television, you can pretty much destroy anything, and you flush half of it down the toilet and half of it throw it in the trash. They're not going to really get anything on you. So, again, with as well as a way, if you recognize that, yes, these things can happen to me, and you take proactive measures to protect yourself, in general, you're going to be in pretty good shape. If you do nothing and just expect that, you know, your government or the corporations or your bank are all going to protect you, then you increase your risks of being victimized. So you take advantage of the different products and services that are out there that may cost something or they may cost nothing. There's, you know, different ways of doing it. And you learn the ins and outs, the do's and don'ts, all the fundamentals of how to protect yourself from all these different issues, and you mitigate a certain level of risk.
I think that's a wonderful suggestion. Do you have any suggestions for people who, you know, basically we're talking about, I shouldn't say suggestions, but let's comment about some of these older people, because there's a joke running around the Internet that someone sent me that I died laughing at. I don't know if you saw it, Simon, about it's a repeat of a story in England about someone who got a, basically they had got a bill for additional charges from a credit card company and called them up and said, you know, my father's dead, or maybe it was the daughter dead. And
they said,
oh, yeah, you still owe the late fees. And I go, well, you know, what are you going to do? He's dead. So the joke was, you've got to cancel your credit cards before you die, or someone can misuse your credit cards after you're dead. And actually, that really does happen in society, doesn't it? Where people can take a dead person's information, among other things, abuse their Social Security and other things. Have you seen that occur?
Yeah, that's. I actually just did an article in creditcards.com, which also ended up on Fox Business, on that exact same topic. And the problem here is twofold. Number one, if your spouse passes and you are connected to their existing accounts, well, then you are going to be responsible for those existing accounts. There's no getting around that. If you're not connected to their existing accounts, meaning that you're not in any way, shape, or form married to that person, contractually obligated to their debt. If you're not, then you're not going to have a problem. If you are, then you're going to have a problem. If their identity is stolen, that's a whole other story. And it's interesting because the same way that you protect the living from identity theft is the same way that you protect the deceased. Generally, that is with either identity theft protection, which is services that you pay a fee for that are available from anywhere from $5, $10 to $15 a month, which, you know, can be a little bit of money for some people. Or you get what's called a credit freeze. And a credit freeze is either free or a very small fee. It could be as much as $45 in total for all three credit bureaus, TransUnion, Experian, Equifax. It's $15 per credit bureau. So if you get a credit freeze while you're alive, that will do a pretty good job of preventing the bad guy from opening up new accounts under your name, from getting a new line of credit using your social.
Right.
Beyond that,
but why would I want to get a credit freeze if I'm still alive?
You want to get a credit freeze while you're alive so that the bad guy doesn't open up any new accounts while you're alive. That prevents identity theft.
Isn't that going to prevent me from opening up a new account?
Well, let me ask you, Simon. I am 43, and I've got a couple of vehicles in the driveway that are paid for. I'm in a house that I'm pretty sure I'm going to be in for the next 10 years. And I've got a couple of credit cards in my wallet. I've got an American Express and a MasterCard. And I'm pretty well established in that regard. Like, I'm set. I got what I need. And I don't see any reason why I might need to open up any line of credit anytime soon. I definitely don't see myself going into Best Buy or Home Depot and getting, you know, a line of credit. I don't see that, like, I need to get any instant credit anywhere because I've got what I need, I got what I want, I'm established, and I generally make conscious decisions in regards to making big purchases. So instant credit isn't something that I normally would do. So getting a credit freeze protects anybody from opening up any new accounts under my name and prevents the bad guy from doing it. It also prevents me from doing it, but only for a day. So when I want to get a line of credit, I just go ahead and thaw or unlock my credit, and within a day I can go and buy that, you know, finance that new car or whatever. So it's actually a pretty efficient system that locks down your credit, so you don't always have an open line of credit. Like, I mean, meaning you don't have an open opportunity 24/7, 365 to get credit. Like, you just need a day to pre-plan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, and I'm not sure that Simon saw that one coming. So that is an important aspect, I think, of doing that. But for a lot of people, they really live a more fluid life, but because they don't consider these alternatives and what the dangers are. And we have to do a better job, in my opinion, of educating people every day. And one of my suggestions, and in a time when education is already strained in our country, we could save our country billions of dollars by educating kids now on the dangers of having information running loose in the information network, and we could cure this over a generation, in my opinion, with increased education. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, education is paramount. I mean, people need to, like, get a clue, you know. The worst thing you could do is nothing. You know, ignorance is not bliss. You really do need to know what your options are and how to protect yourself. And the more informed you are, the greater you decrease your chances of being victimized with whatever the crime is.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And you know, getting back to that credit, Simon, you want to freeze your credit. Like, if I get your social, I can open up lines of credit under your name, and you won't know about it for a year or two. So you want to just go ahead and lock down your credit, because my guess is you're probably relatively established. And, you know, unless you're, like, in your early 20s, there might be, like, a window of, like, 2 or 3 years where you might want to keep that line of credit open. But for the majority of people, you want to, like, you can still have your existing credit cards and everything. You can still have your existing loans. You just don't need anybody else opening up accounts under your name without your authorization.
Okay, you're talking about an interesting aspect, and I have to admit that I had always assumed that you know, a credit freeze basically locked your account, you know, down so much that it would take an act of Congress to do anything.
No, you get an email or a snail mail from the credit bureaus. Once you freeze your credit, you get notification from them on how to thaw your credit. And it's just like checking your Facebook account. You log in, you click a couple of buttons, and then you tell them how long you wanted to thaw it, and they'll thaw it for a day, a week, a month, indefinitely, and then it'll lock back up, and then you're done. So it's real simple. It's not complicated at all, and anybody can do it.
Okay, yeah. but this brings us to another form of identity theft, social engineering. I think Kevin Mitnick was probably the most famous at it.
Oh, yes.
How do you prevent social engineering identity theft from this credit lock?
So social engineering is not so much identity theft, but a technique. It's a con, you know, it's a confidence crime. And anyone who gets on the phone, shows up in person, that actively persuades someone in one way, shape, or form to do their bidding is a con man, and they're using the technique of social engineering to accomplish that task. And that is essentially using numerous tactics that revolve around gaining someone's trust, and ultimately they are either posing as somebody who's desperate and needs something, somebody as a authority figure, or they're posing as whether a banker or a landlord or a friend or a grandson or whatever, a grandson calling a grandmother saying, I'm in Texas and I've been arrested. I need you to send me $2,500 for bail money. And the grandmother is hard at hearing, and the kid just called her and said, grandma. And she's like, Johnny? Yeah, it's Johnny. And there you go. I mean, Johnny's got her locked in. And that's a grandmother scam. And that stuff goes on all day, every day. How do you prevent that? Well, that's education. That's making people alert and aware. I mean, I write, 30 to 40 blog posts a month on just these issues, and I'm consistently making people aware of the different scams and schemes and fraud and the different ways in which the bad guy tries to get at you, and people are either paying attention or they don't. And my hopes and goals are that they pay attention. Because the bad guy, they generally seem to have the upper hand. They're doing a really good job of conning millions and millions of people every single day. Even those phishing emails that we receive, you receive an email that looks like it's coming from your bank or PayPal or AOL or whatever, that's a form of social engineering as well. That's, saying that this is your bank and your account's been shut down and you have to respond with your username and password and click this link, and you go to a spoofed website, and once you go to the spoofed website, you plug in your information. And in the process, you might even click a link to download some type of an executable, a virus, onto your machine that infects your device. And so, there's no end to the ingenuity of the bad guy. But as long as we, as concerned citizens, aware and alert, are honoring and paying attention to our personal security, we can actually do something about it,
Actually, Manny, did you realize that Citibank is now sending emails from Russia? I'm assuming that they've outsourced their services. I got one just yesterday claiming that my account had been hacked.
I've received them from Russia also, and I've commented in different shows how much the Russian mob likes this type of crime, because, of course, they're able to commit these crimes from distance and in jurisdictions where they feel they can't be apprehended. And that's becoming a major factor as I watch these levels of crimes, is that it's important to the people who commit these crimes that they're able to do it in an area where they feel there's least amount of effort put into detecting them.
All right. This obviously invites the question. We have a crime, and we all know that there has to be a perpetrator and a victim. Now, oftentimes with identity theft, the perpetrator is unknown or untouchable because they're in Russia, Romania, China, or wherever. What kind of recourse does a victim have?
So today, the perpetrators certainly are worldwide, and what's good is that the law enforcement community is definitely getting together, both on the state, federal, and international level, where the guys in Russia and China and Romania and others occasionally do actually get busted. Not so much China, but in the Eastern Bloc, we're seeing more of that. And because the problem is that the integrity of the Internet, if a major organization is hacked, if the banking system, financial system is compromised, that can affect everybody, every nation. And so you're seeing more and more law enforcement agencies worldwide getting together and being on the same page and actually working together to catch the bad guy. You know, they say in the banking industry, every bank robbery is every bank's problem. And every bank robbery being every bank's problem, well, if it's done virtually from Romania to here in the U.S., well, it's still every bank's robbery, it's still every bank's problem, however it happens. And so they're beginning to work together in that way. As far as the consumer, you know, actually tracking down and catching the bad guy, I get emails from people all the time who say, you know, how do I catch the person who's doing this to me and who stole my credit card information? I tell them, don't worry about it. I mean, there's really not much you can do about that. Sure, you can go ahead and sleuth everything and work towards, you know, finding out who did it, but chances of that happening are slim, and you probably spend more time, energy, and effort and emotional stock than you really need to, and you're not going to find any satisfaction in the long run, because catching a criminal hacker is not that easy. Especially for a layman, for a consumer. Leave that to law enforcement. Even law enforcement has a hard time with it. I mean, they have been very successful at it over the past few years as they've gotten really good at understanding how organized crime works in this regard. But as a consumer, just call your credit card company up and say, hey, these charges were made. I didn't make them. They take the charges off, and you live happily ever after.
Manny, from your legal perspective, what do you think of this?
Well, first of all, I want to relate a story about your earlier comments about you know, the stolen identities. I found out quite by accident. I got received a letter from the phone company saying that I owed them, you know, something like $900 for an unpaid phone bill from an area of Los Angeles. It's about 50 miles from my house. That's how big Los Angeles is. And I sort of laughed, and I said, guys, I'm a customer of yours, and you should take a look at my billing address and see where I live. And I don't live where you say I live. And you opened an account using my credit, but didn't bother to even call and inform me that, gee, it seems kind of odd that you're an active client here and you're out opening a business there. So sometimes this falls into negligence by the carriers, who I feel sometimes don't put enough effort out. And for a while I felt that basically insurance companies and credit card companies were not putting an effort out to stop this, until the cost became so prohibitively high through litigation and bad experiences that they now act on it. And you're right, the individual cannot do anything about it. I could do nothing about it. I wanted to trace it down because I had a suspicion that a relative of mine, who we've all had problems with, you know, was capable of doing those type of things to his relatives. So, you know, we all went, gee, you know, could it be such and such, this, the bad seed in the other side of my family? And so I think there's a natural tendency to look in other directions. So what do you do about all this? Exactly what Robert described. Get on with your life, get as far away about it, but pressure the insurance companies, pressure the credit card companies. Until they receive enough pressure from individuals, they won't make it a priority. And one of the things, Robert, that I feel has happened is the losses have increased to the point where they just can't simply ignore them and write them off. So once the losses hit a certain level, the credit companies went into action because they realized they had to do this to basically save themselves some money. But until the cost of doing nothing is higher than the cost of doing something, basically credit cards will do, companies will do nothing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And also, too, just if you don't mind me pointing out, that line of credit that was opened up under your name without your authorization, right? That's what happened, right?
Right.
That could have been prevented with a credit freeze.
That's my point, is your credit freeze was a wonderful suggestion that had never really, and of course, when that happened a few years ago, even though I was aware of credit card, you know, fraud and all the rest of it as a lawyer, you know, I probably wasn't taking it as seriously as I should, because, you know, sometimes you feel like, well, how can that happen to me? And, you know, and since I paid the extra charge to be free of those responsibilities, for a while I didn't care. But in the end, the time it takes an individual to deal with this is such that you have to care. Because it takes you away from your job, takes away from your family. Sometimes in some marriages it causes family fights and, you know, all the things we can all imagine go with a negative experience. And that's probably been your experience, right?
I know people have been divorced because of identity theft.
I imagine they have.
Yeah, the trucker whose identity is stolen and the bad guy drives, you know, a commercial truck under the stolen identity's name and license information, and then as a result, you know, gets in a car accident or a truck accident, and the rail driver loses his commercial driver's license, which is the way he earns his living, and so now he can't get his driver's license back because, you know, a guy has basically gotten a really bad accident using his driver's license, and the state doesn't want to believe that it wasn't him that was in the accident. And so now he goes for 6 months at a time without being able to work because he doesn't have a license. The mortgage goes unpaid. And, you know, he gets in fights with his wife. She cheats on him, and that's it. They're done.
Yeah. You know, you missed, of course, you didn't hear our previous show, but my wife was complaining, a guest on the show was complaining that Bally's had... someone had walked into Bally's and said that they were her brother and basically got a card based on her. And she noticed because they upped the fees at the end of the year to a family rate. She goes, I don't have any family there. She says, well, you authorized your brother to do that. Well, we did a little checking on this and got a little security footage thanks to the help of some of my investigators, and turned out he was African-American. So my wife called him up and said, gee, you know, unless you can prove I've got an African-American brother, I'd like, you know, enough of this stuff. And even though they backed down, and they backed down because what happened is, as usual, you know, my wife didn't want to bother me, so she didn't say anything. One day, which is, if you've never heard these stories from lawyers, what happens when you're married to a lawyer is wives sort of get up one day and they go, I've had enough. They walk into your office and they're unhappy and they're miserable. And by the time they're done, you know, you could go, okay, anyone who makes my wife miserable is headed for some trouble with me. And lawyers get very, very upset about this. And they tend to take it out on the companies that upset their wives, which is sort of what happened here, if you can imagine. So I think that what happens is you have two classes of people. Those that have some ability because of their business skill and experience to deal with these problems, and some people who are extremely vulnerable who have never been exposed to these problems before and aren't able to solve them easily.
Yeah. Gents, I got a jet. Thank you so much.
It's been
Robert,
a pleasure.
It has been delightful to talk to you, and I do hope you'll join us again soon.
Absolutely. I thoroughly appreciate the opportunity. Anybody can check me out online at IDTheftSecurity.com. Again, it's IDTheftSecurity.com, or visit my friends over at McAfee.com.
Okay, we will talk to you again.
Take care.
My pleasure, Robert. Bye. Now that Robert's off the phone, I've been dying to ask the question. I'll save it for another show about McAfee, who's my least favorite of all the computer security companies.
I wasn't going there.
You pretty well knew that, didn't you? I would not describe myself as a Microsoft follower or believer. And, you know, to digress for a moment into computers, I had a difficulty this week, which you may have noticed. I sent you a document, and that document had a watermark on it that I had no idea was there or why, and it was produced by Microsoft's program because they were trying to encourage me or compel me to buy a program that was already on my computer. And so you and somebody else sent me a note saying, I'm having trouble reading this because of, and I'm going, what? And so it turned out the watermark was sent to all of you, wasn't it?
Oh, indeed.
And you had no trouble figuring out the cause, did you?
Oh, no, I knew exactly what it was. I have to admit that in a small way, I was blaming you. Yeah, I'm going, oh, Manny, you cheapskate. Yeah.
You know, and what bothers me about it is, you know, it was, and let's talk about it. It's a simple Adobe Reader program. I don't know anyone in this world that doesn't have an Adobe Reader program, because virtually everyone in this, every program in the world offers it to. In fact, they even send free updates. That's how much Adobe wants to keep you online, right?
Right.
Yeah. So why does Microsoft seem to think that they are the world's only source for a program that literally everybody else in the world peddles?
I don't know.
You know, I know it's a rhetorical question, but that's the whole issue with Microsoft, is they think they are the only one in the world.
Okay, but I want to go back to identity theft.
Oh, you mean I can't beat up on Microsoft today? Oh, what's the story?
Oh, well, you can beat up on them, sure. but I mean, most times the victim is indeed a victim, but they don't know who the perpetrator is. On occasions, they do, but you know, what about the penalties? Do they match the crime? Yeah, if you whack someone over the head with a tire iron, you know, you're going to go to jail. But if you're just stealing money, it's white crime, or white-collar crime. Who cares?
Well, I think that things have changed, actually, don't you, that people seem to care and have now, if they didn't before, they certainly understand the dangers and significance of having credit reports or having their credit frozen or applying for a mortgage to buy a house, that once-in-a-lifetime house for your family, and find out nobody wants to lend you any money because they think you're some kind of flake because of the credit report that includes information that's not you. Isn't that one of the big problems now?
Well, yes, it is. But I'll repose the question.
Oh, good. Fun. I'm running around in circles now. Go ahead. I'm joking.
All right. You whack someone over the head with a tire iron, you end up behind bars. Yeah, it's plain and simple. You're not allowed to whack people around the head with tire irons. But if you steal their identity, you steal their money, it's white-collar crime. Doesn't seem to have the same oomph as a tire iron.
Well, you're right. Let's go specifically into that topic. You know, historically in this world, crime was a very personal issue. You had to look somebody in the eye to commit it. Then all of a sudden, society changed, and you didn't have to do that anymore. You could do it from a distance. Well, society, I don't think, was prepared for that change in the manner in which our countries run. So suddenly, crime could be done at a distance, far away, by someone you don't know, someone who isn't looking you in the eyes, so to speak. And the question is, how do individuals do anything about it? And this is the first time the society has really addressed that issue. And yes, it is a very, very difficult issue. And especially in the recent years, since that crime basically spread out around the world, which is directly related to, well, how about the Iron Curtain coming down, which really brought Europe, and particularly Russia, into every type of crime they could possibly have. And before that, Russians basically committed crimes against other Russians and really didn't have the ability to commit crimes against the rest of the world, did they?
Oh, indeed. But white-collar crime is a tricky one. And I'm going to use this as a segue into an area that you may or may not wish to comment about. But there was a lawsuit filed late last week, I think it was Thursday, that involves identity theft. Do you have any comments on it?
Well, yes. I think it's a matter of record online that I am the author of that lawsuit. And for listeners who haven't seen this in the news, the Wall Street Journal, and a variety of other publications, I filed a lawsuit on behalf of a client that involved the theft of over 178 confidential documents, and specifically the arena of medical records and attorney-client records. And what makes this interesting, especially when you consider our conversation, is that no one really addresses what happens to files that are in contained by your credit card company. I mean, are there other people that can steal your information? Yes. You may be very surprised to discover where and how your records become vulnerable. And in this particular case, it's because an employee at a law firm mishandled them, took a job somebody somewhere else, and decided to take them along with him. And we all know that's a problem in our country as it is, which specifically is individuals stealing corporate records to go to the next job. Usually it's customer lists that are confidential. And our country has a long history of litigation over, basically, what do you do with client lists when you leave? Are you entitled to use them? You know, and so it's a big issue, Simon, and we're going to ferret out what happens to a law firm who's taken advantage of these documents and used them in a way that society probably would not allow.
Right. I parted company with a company under less than great circumstances. And I actually sat with customer records and other things, and I was solicited for this information. He got this. I said nope. I destroyed the records. I just couldn't see anything good coming from it. You don't move from company to company and take the data with you. I think if it's not illegal, it should be.
Well, it is illegal, and it is certainly civilly illegal because you're stealing confidential records, but this has become somewhat a way of life in American business with all the various talk about things that can't control what's internal. And as a result, there's two laws were passed. One, of course, the HIPAA laws that deal primarily with the issues involving your medical records. And then, of course, there is the issue of high-tech, which is an extension of that. All of them brought on the Recovery Act that was done recently that try to protect records from being distributed and stolen from other sources, and they've increased penalties dramatically. I mean, it's just really shocking how much the penalties have gone up. So, when you look at it, and I'm going to go through a couple of them, and it'll give everybody an idea because, basically most Americans aren't familiar with HIPAA, although they hear the words. HIPAA stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. And, of course, why do we have this acronym? Because everyone in our government loves to have these cute little names, HIPAA, high-tech, et cetera. High-tech stands for basically the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act. I mean, they just could have called it the Steal Your Records Act, okay? But that would have been SYRA, and who wants, no one wants to call it CIRA, so they picked a name that they all liked. But the bottom line to all this is it requires that if your records are stolen, the hospital or other people report it to the Attorney General or other people, as well as the requirement to report it to each one of the potential victims. And in many of these cases, they don't hear about it. And more than that, the new law, the federal law, requires it has to be done within 60 days. So we're talking about, a pretty strong obligation about the stealing of medical records. I think that the same should be required of your credit card numbers, your social security numbers, or any theft of any personal record of which someone else could profit by it. But that would, of course, become a problem because there's penalties for the company that release it. So, you know, the requirements they train their employees, the requirements they monitor them, the requirements they put on steps on the computer. But let's talk about what would happen if they spread that loss to, like, Citibank. Criminal fines for a knowing and improper HIPAA violation range from $50,000 to $250,000. So a hospital, in the case of, like, Michael Jackson or Farrah Fawcett, who leaked these records, could be fined up to that area, okay? The high-tech law extended the scope to criminal penalties and increased potential civil penalties to fines up to $1.5 million per year. Can you imagine Citibank being fined $1.5 million a year? Oh, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? You know?
Well, yeah, they'd have to hike their fees.
Well, they'd also, you'd have to, they'd probably have to hike their political contributions to make the law go away, too. They'd rather spend that money on lobbyists than they would on helping people. And by the way, that also requires, some to report to the state attorney general. And the state attorney general would have the power to sue Citibank and all these other ones. And they would have to pay the attorney's fees of the attorney general, et cetera. And then you have states like California, which has a constitutional article of a right of privacy, which includes stolen records. So what we have are lots of laws on the book, but what we don't have are a lot of enforcement against major corporations, which goes back to the Occupy Wall Street issue that too many people are exempt from the laws as it is right now. So here we are. We have hospitals holding their feet to the ultimate flame, which is, of course, to protect your medical records or be fined horrendous amounts of money. We have corporate America, who's guilty of many, many more breaches of security, don't have these kind of penalties. And it's back to what I said earlier, is that until these people feel like they're being hurt, they aren't taking strong action to protect you and I.
Right, but, you know, health records. If I was 20 years old and fit as a fiddle, I'd be listening to this and going, well, I don't care.
I don't
agree,
Simon. Simon, I don't agree. Let me give you an example. What if you are a 20-something young man and you went to the doctor because you had an adverse reaction to, let's say, cocaine, because you were partying hard in college, and you go apply for a job, and that record is leaked and shows that you had an episode with cocaine, do you think you would get that job? And the answer is no, you wouldn't.
Right. And incidentally, I have never tried cocaine. So you heard it here first, folks.
Oh, that's no fun. We can't even check up on you.
Right. But the point is that once you're out of your 20s and 30s, you know, you hit the 40s and dreaded 50s.
Well, you've got another one to go before it gets really dreaded.
Right. But, medical issues do exist. High blood pressure, all sorts of opportunities. Now,
well, don't you think that in some cultures, in particular our kind of culture, that people are more accepting of someone in the of advanced age having some of these health problems? Which is, of course, why health insurance can be difficult for them, where a younger person who has any of these problems is literally branded for life.
Yes, but my point is you're screwed. If my HIPAA records are being ported around, pretty much they may just be an adjunct to my resume. We don't want him. He's got high blood pressure.
Well, Simon, I think this is an ongoing problem. I have clients who run security checks on people that I would describe far above the normal ones, and you've discussed this with some of my investigators from time to time, and you've determined their level of skill of obtaining records, and so it's very hard to have a secret from anybody in this world.
Okay. I'll do this question a different way. I'm Joe Blow. I don't have any legal standing. I don't have any nice badges I can use, but I can go on the internet and find out all about Joe Blow or Jane Blow. Should that be allowed? I mean, where is the line drawn between what's legal and what isn't legal?
Well, yeah, we all receive these pop-up ads. You know, like, for instance, if you type in John William Smith, you'll get a thing of it going, search John William Smith for criminal blah, 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 and they'll come up with an address of a John William Smith who may or may not be somebody you know, and the inference is that he has a criminal record. But until you pay that money and you see what's really in there, you don't really know, do you? So it may be that you're being solicited to find out information that doesn't exist. And that's really remarkable, isn't it?
Oh, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
Do a search on almost any name that you can invent. And, hey, we have some data on this guy. Send us $30, we'll tell you what it is. There's something wrong. Is there any kind of control over releasing of these documents?
No, and, we've discussed this before. There's a variety of areas of concern. For example, people who advertise or advertise in different states or may or may not be licensed. When I look at some of these, they come from companies in Maine who have, really sparse laws in terms of privacy. They may come from states that are Wyoming and other ones like that where there's literally none. And these states have different rules than, say, California and New York and a number of other schools, and states, including their neighboring Massachusetts. So some of the states, and it happened in Missouri, feel that these people are required to have private investigators' licenses, and there's been a number of class actions filed against them because they're literally practicing in an area that's required to be licensed, I believe, in all 48 states. I don't think there is a state in the United States where you can practice the art of private investigation without a license, and most of those licenses, frankly, are not easy to obtain.
Oh, all right. I'm going to put on my incredibly dumb hat for a moment.
Uh-oh.
Because I like it. I'm Simon Barrett. I want to find out about, whoever. Where is that fine line between me fiddling around in Google and other areas and being a licensed investigator?
Well, anything you do yourself, you don't require a license for. But when you go to somebody else and you hire them, they're required to have a license. For example, if your child has a cut knee and you want to take care of it, then you have a right. It's your child. But if your neighbor has a cut knee, unless you're applying the Good Samaritan rule, which protects people who basically provide some kind of emergency service, then you could be liable for doing that because that's something normally that a doctor would do. So when you take away the fact that none of this is an emergency, when you go to do those actions for somebody else, you're doing that at your own risk. And that would include, in this case, looking up information for somebody else. For example, what if someone did look up that information on John William Smith and it turned out that he provided you and I with totally erroneous information and we excluded somebody from a job or took some action that caused them to sue us? Well, we could be liable, but on our side, we could say we contracted and paid for this even though it was a small amount of money, and therefore we have a right to go against the guy who ripped us off and told us the wrong information. Well, if he's not licensed, not required to carry insurance, then doing that's a lot harder, isn't it?
Yeah, I had never really thought of it in those views.
You know, people get angry and they want some type of recompense. I mean, obviously, Simon, if you or some other person you knew were being sued for some huge amount of money because of someone else's actions, you would want to insulate yourself from liability by collecting from that person, wouldn't you? If he's responsible, why should you be the one to pay for what he's done? So you, like any other red-blooded American, would go, hey, I paid you for this, it didn't work, and guess what? You got me sued, so what are you going to do to protect me? Isn't that what your reaction would be?
Actually, my reaction would be, oh, I think I'm going to have a lay down for a couple of hours.
Well, but it is common for people to get other people into lawsuits. I mean, if it weren't for that, lawyers would have to find a new job. I mean, lawyers, my son used to say to me when he started practicing law, this is horrible, I know this is happening, whatever. And I would say to him, if this stuff doesn't happen, you're never going to feed yourself. Because lawyers basically survive because of thieves like this and people who just totally ignore the rules and laws of the United States of America, because they just want to make money. And without dishonest people, how do lawyers survive? I bet you most people don't think about that.
Right. Okay, I'm going to broach a subject which, if you say no, I'll accept your answer, and I will shut up.
That'll be rare. as Jan, for listeners who don't know, this is Simon's wife. Is she aware that's going to happen? If not, I should notify her. Because, I'm required by law to notify wives when husbands stop this stuff. You know that.
So, there's this court case floating around. 178 people have lost their medical, financial, and other personal records because someone might just have possibly copied half a terabyte, which is the equivalent of watching 500 Netflix movies to an external hard drive and move to another company. Where do you even start with this case?
It is very difficult. It is just almost to the point where a lot of people, including myself, find these events very hard to believe the first time around. You say to yourself, who would do that? Why would they do something like that? And then you start trying to sort out the various consequences of it. And the consequences will be quite extreme for most in this case. Basically, it's a theft. And the question is, if you can prove that this person took this kind of information without consent, the owner of it, then that's no different than invading your personal records directly and taking it, say, from your home. When you view what we've just discussed in terms of the status of the law around the country, and excuse me, HIPAA and all the other laws, then it becomes even more shocking to me.
Right, but even if the original owner of the data said, "Oh, sure, it's fine. You can plug your external hard drive in and copy the 500 Netflix movies." he doesn't have the right because the Netflix movies are owned by other people. Yeah, was there any attempt made to talk to the 178 people that had their records copied?
Oh, I'm certain not one word was said. In fact, I know for a fact in the case you're talking about, they received no permission, and the people whose records were stolen are basically in shock. They cannot believe this happened. So if you look at that, that's even more alarming. So, go ahead.
No, I mean, it appalls me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I occasionally, I think the last time was about 6 years ago. I mean, I went to a hospital, and they gave me the good news. Simon, you've had a stroke, but it wasn't today. I went, wow, let's get cake and candles out.
you know, but that happens to a great many people, by the way, in terms of strokes. And by the way, a lot of people have silent heart attacks and don't realize it until the one that is the granddaddy of them all strikes them down. And when they do surgery, they open them up, they find huge amounts of scar tissue. And so they start asking people, did your husband ever have these symptoms before? And because most people, attribute it, oh, I got a cramp, or I got this or that, or I got a little shortness of breath, but it's no big deal, it'll go away. So most people don't realize when they're having a heart attack.
Right, but my point is that I'm not sure. I want, my medical records shared, or at the very least, I want to have a say in it. Yeah,
I'm sure you don't. I mean, this isn't a marginal call. I don't think there's an American who wants anything in their life shared, and let alone, anything given out without their consent. Now, I turned on an old Burt Lancaster Western, I turned on the TV, called, it was just in the background, I recognized it immediately. I saw it as a child, called The Kentuckian. It was a remake of a John Wayne classic from the late 30s, and basically one of the highlights of all that film was a message that wasn't lost on me this time around, that the character wanted to go to Texas because nobody could, the quote was, someone could fire a gun and they couldn't hit your territory with a bullet because everything was so large. Well, not true anymore because essentially, we're so crowded as a country that nothing is really safe away from anybody. So at the end of the day, the issue becomes we have a country who's basically thrived and demanded a level of privacy that few other countries ever did. That's what the pioneers of America stood for, and now we've created a country that is so cramped that it's now fighting over space, and now our personal information is becoming cramped, so to speak, and available to everybody. I couldn't imagine our forefathers accepting any level of this, can you?
No. It bothers me. I'm a technical kind of a guy. Well, sort of. We've reached the stage where data storage is so cheap that you can store everything. from cradle to grave. And suddenly, cradle to grave is being sold, being given away. I don't like it.
I don't think any of us should, nor should we accept it. We need to make this the highest priority in the world. We need to put out the kind of penalties that we put out for bank robbery. We have a lot of bankrupt robbery in Los Angeles because, one, there's a recession, and two, the unique nature of our freeways allow guys to rob banks and be on freeways quicker than they can even respond to a call. So we've sort of become the robbery capital of the world, sadly and unfortunately. But they've been able to slow it down because the penalties are so severe here that, and in general, that people are afraid to do it. And the people who are committing robbery right now are doing it because they're destitute, not because it's an alternate profession.
Well, I'll offer this a piece of advice, or at least an observation. Don't rob a bank close to the 405 on a Friday afternoon, because a hasty getaway is going to be tough.
Especially now. I don't know if our listeners have watched any of the stories about the 405 being redone, but most of us would describe this as a ranking among the worst experiences of our lives. I mean, a friend of mine tells a story about how she had to go to an event. It's at Mulholland Drive in the 405, and she drives up the hill from her house, and there's a sign that she has to go all the way down the hill to what would be, I would describe as the Santa Monica Boulevard, 8 miles away, to get off the freeway, to get back on the freeway, to turn around, and to go back to where she drove past because she can't get off the freeway to attend some event. So, of course, everybody else was doing it. So you can imagine what the traffic was like to even try and go down there and turn around. So the dinner was supposed to start at 8 o'clock. They held back till 9 o'clock because nobody could get there.
To
describe the gridlock in Los Angeles because of that. Well, you saw how they closed the freeway one night. You saw that on the national news, Carmageddon, where they closed down the freeway not far from my house. Oh, my goodness. That turned, we went through this Olympics and we learned to just stay home, and everybody did a nice job. But I must tell you, it was daunting and very frightful to go through. So, but getting off that back to where we were, this was the other part about the theft. You don't have to go anywhere. You can just get up and go get a cup of coffee in your kitchen when you're done stealing. People can now don't even have to dress up in costumes to rob. In the old days, the bad guys would wear, funky-looking costumes. And you see them in movies all the time, dressed as, dead presidents, which is one of my favorite ones of them. And basically, don't have to do that anymore. I mean, you don't even have to invest in a costume. That's how easy it is to rob as a cyber bandit.
I'm not sure how much you want to get into the lawsuit that was filed. So I'm treading very lightly.
Well, there's only so much I can say. And really, there is only so much to say at this point because we're at a fairly embryonic phase of this lawsuit. We don't know what their opposition is. We also have concerns for the victims, so we're trying very hard not to say anything that would impair their rights or in some way, affect them. And yet at the same time, we need to make this story visible, or I should say available to everybody, partly as a precautionary tale, and partly because all of us feel very strongly that our government must act to start protecting people. I mean, who's going to protect these people if we don't pass some kind of fruitful law?
What really concerns me, and this comes from being a computer geek for 30-plus years, is the sheer volume of data. I mean, it used to be, someone stole a floppy drive that had half a dozen names and addresses on it. But this is huge. I mean, it's a huge amount of data.
Well, more than that, let's talk for a moment about the security breach. It took probably about 20 hours plus to download and steal these documents. So here we have a business that's allowed somebody to spend 20 hours on the computer basically stealing from them. I mean, that's a concern. But let's reverse engineer this and go to the victim. You go into a doctor's office. You expect you have some expectation that he's going to handle your records and your personal information privately. But you suddenly discover that he didn't, and somebody else now has it, and all this trust you had in your doctor is just evaporated. Now, people need to think about that. Now, if Americans suddenly become frightened they can't go to the doctor without some release of their records, what does that mean? I mean, think about that one. That's a scary one, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Where
are we safe these days?
Right. I have a friend who is the CIO of a good-sized credit union in the Midwest. I won't name names. And I had a long discussion with him about data security. You know, how do you prevent people stealing stuff? There is no computer that has a USB drive enabled, certainly no burning device. There is no access to the internet. I mean, this is very much a closed environment. And he ended the conversation with, and thank goodness, we've never had a data breach.
Well, that would be a big contributor to it. I mean, that's one of the things that affects multinational corporations, is they permit so many people within their own personal network to access so much of this. So the fact that they're trying to make it easier for their employees to function, in essence, also makes it easier for people to access. Plus, I think we all agree that the more people that touch something, the more likely it is to get stolen or in some way misused. That one really bothers me. We are at a stage now in our society where dishonesty is so high among employees that... There we go. We get a little static on this one. I thought we had a lot of rain here.
That wasn't static. That was someone from the hood with a really loud car.
Okay. So, but anyway, my point is that one of the biggest problems in our society is this ongoing, you know, dishonesty among employees. So if you've got basically 10,000 employees, it's safe to say in this modern society that a certain level of them are less than honest. Why? Because a certain level of all employees these days seem to be less than honest.
Right.
So the sheer numbers make this very difficult, because in the lawsuit that you're talking about, this was not done by a hacker. This was done by an employee who had a fiduciary duty, who would have had any access, security access, and had the ability to really get into these documents, and nobody could have really stopped him. The issue, though, to me, becomes a little different, is major corporations need to put some type of tracking system, like the ones you see in the movies that tells who goes in, who goes out, what time of day, and they're available. I had one in a company I ran, because I like to know who accessed the office at midnight on a Saturday night. Sometimes they were for amorous reasons, which you don't appreciate. You know, it's like you tell your employees, would you go get a motel, please? And yeah, you've seen your share of those too, I'm sure. And so at the end of the day, there are a lot of reasons why you know, employees do this stuff, but the fact is that it is very, very disturbing. It really is. So, you know, having employees go in and out unfettered and uncontrolled is always a problem in business.
Right. I can't resist a little levity at this point. It was early 90s. I was working for a very large banking group, and we had an incredibly serious software problem. Three of us, the brain trust, if you will, said, let's tack this tomorrow. No one else will be around. So there we were. You know, we didn't have the lights on. We're just scanning 10,000 bloody lines of COBOL, trying to find the problem. And in comes one of the programmers, and she stood about 5 foot nothing, and with her was an 8'6" person of black persuasion, and it just happened to be Martin Luther King Day. They didn't notice us as they walked by and went into one of the conference rooms. And one of my accomplices in fixing the problem just said, "Wow, there's a woman that takes Martin Luther King Day really seriously."
Now that is a good line. Oh yeah, it's amazing what goes on in businesses after dark, isn't it?
Indeed.
You know, you just catch employees doing the, well, you know, the most amazing things, right?
Absolutely. After about 20 minutes, they left. That they were still blissfully unaware that, you know, the three of us were still, you know, poring over reams of paper and computer screens. Life is good.
Yeah, it really is. You know, I'm getting to worry about you guys, though. And you weren't distracted?
No.
Yes, I'm definitely worried about you guys. I'm sure our viewers or listeners are shaking their heads right now, because that might be a tough atmosphere for the average person to work in.
Yeah. But probably not for the regular person.
No. But, you know, coming back to all of this for a moment, you know, the whole purpose of this show is to make people more and more aware of what's going on around us in terms of breaches of records, what they're exposed to, who might get into their lives and have the ability to read all of this. And at the end of the day, it should alarm everybody that it's become just far too easy to violate laws. It's just getting far too easy for people to, you know, simply invade your privacy, steal what they want, and move on without getting on a horse and having to ride out of town with a posse. And in a lot of times, if you think of the Old West, the difference between Tombstone and the next city might be 100 miles of desert, and that might have been the best security of all. Now,
right,
the distance is 5 minutes to a freeway.
Right, but this comes back to the absolute kernel of the problem. I mean, how safe is anything, any data that you have?
It's not. It's absolutely not. As long as someone is allowed access to your computer, it's not safe. It's not safe to throw things in the trash. Right now, we are in what I would describe as the frontier again At this time, our frontier consists more of basically, I would describe the old West theory of, you know, steal what you can, rob banks, run, do anything you can to steal because who can catch you? And as long as there's an atmosphere that you're not going to get caught, people are going to sit there and violate the law and steal. There's no motivation, fear, or otherwise for them to stop. None.
Well, I'm also concerned that, you know, I used the tire iron story, but, you know, do the penalties really come up to the, you know, to meet the problem?
No. And I think what needs to happen is for someone to steal the identity of a United States senator and run up a bunch of bills on him. And when they do, guess what? They might start taking this more seriously. Because I find Congress only reacts when someone does something to hurt them individually.
Better still, you know, go to the theater or restaurant, offer your credit card. Oh, well, thank you very much, President Obama.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure he even has one these days. But no, I say this over and over again. You know, one of my wife's aunt's favorite expressions is what you don't see, you have to feel. Congress doesn't see this as as big a problem as it is, and some of them have to feel it personally in their lives, or they're not going to change and do anything about it. It's not complicated. They don't care enough right now because it's not costing anybody enough money for them to consider it dangerous.
Right. Well, it goes back to the concept of it's a victimless crime. Someone else will pick the tab up.
No, I don't think it's that. And I'll give you a thought about the history of law. One of the things that went on during the Industrial Revolution was who was supposed to pay the cost of it? By the cost of it, I mean specifically when people were injured. And for a long period of time, it was so important for our country to grow and become economically more powerful, there was a tendency to not pay people damages for personal injury. The worst situations were what we used to call the round table accidents, which are, you know, the railroad ones where they turn the railroad trains around. You've seen those round tables?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
In the 1870s, large numbers of children are losing legs because they look like fun to play with or play chase with a round table. And finally, they had to pass a law, or actually what they did is they punished a couple of the various manufacturers and railroads for basically not providing a safe atmosphere for children, and they immediately changed it and stopped it because it was going to cost some money. So until industry has to pay for the consequences of what they do, they make little or no effort to stop or correct anything. And that's been the history of American tort law.
I love torts. Oh, no, now it's tarts that I love. I'm looking at the clock. Do you want to pursue this further, or
no? It's been a long day for our listeners. We should let them get back to their families. I want to leave it with this thought. We're not done with this topic. We hope to have a guest today. Dan McCann is an expert in California on that. Who, as I joked, it's raining cats and dogs there, and he was stuck somewhere involving something. We're going to have them back. We're going to keep pushing this. We're going to try to update people on what's going on in these various lawsuits and provide everybody a reason to stand up and complain to the local politicians about what's going wrong in our society and how we can stop some of these issues. And hopefully, Simon, we're going to do some good with this and maybe force some people to change. We did that quite successfully against pink slime on our health show and a variety of other things that are finally come to the general public's knowledge. And we're going to try and do this with these credit issues and identity theft and see what we can do to foster maybe a different world for our listeners.
I have to admit that I just about fell out of my chair laughing when I saw pink slime on CNN.
Oh yeah, I said, boy, we've come a long way. Nobody wanted to listen to us a year or so ago, did they? They thought we were all quacks when we complained about this stuff.
Oh yeah, bunch of whack jobs. Leave them alone.
Well, we are a bunch of whack jobs. We were just right. You know,
right.
You know that old line about, you know, I may be paranoid, but you know, I may also be right, and that's applied to this.
Yeah, I prefer the. No, you're not paranoid. They are after you.
Yeah, you know, and I will leave this nameless, but a friend of mine who you've interviewed before would say to me, I don't know what's wrong with this stuff. I eat it every day. I don't have a problem with it. And then his girlfriend told me his blood pressure was 160 over, or 190 over 160. And I said, sure, it isn't affecting you. Right. And on that note, I'd like to thank all our listeners. We're going to keep crusading on some of these issues, and hopefully we're providing you with enough information for you to safeguard your credit and your life and other things more. And again, thank you for listening to us.
Manny, thank you, and we will be back next week.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.